No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, folks. Welcome to Film Study. It's time for the second part of the show on the defense. And Maureen was with us on part one, which in its own right was completely exhausting, but she had lots to say about the defense, about our process, and lots of funny things to say, I think, in general. If you would, please give that a chance. If you will, there's a lot to be seen in terms of Ravens schematically in this game, how they went with light-handed again on the defensive line and outside linebacker in the front five, I should say, because it was really three outside linebackers were the problem. We talked about that some. Talked, like I said, about process some. The guys who played in the secondary, a lot of the package stuff, and how we compile what we do for both the articles and the podcast. So I do appreciate that as always, and really appreciated Maureen coming on and doing this first show with me. Second show, it'll just be me solo, and we're going to talk about the pass rush. Then we'll talk about some individual players. And we'll have a fairly short episode, I believe, here, at least not a full hour. So first thing we're going to talk about is the pass rush. So Caleb Williams had, I would not say, a particularly great or particularly bad opportunity set. 13 ample time and space opportunities on 39 pass plays resulting in a passer sack. So one-third exactly. And happened to be one-third exactly of each of the three types, one-third ATS, one-third BOQ, and one-third pressure exactly. First time I could ever remember that happening, by the way. And those ATS plays went for 114 yards. Was one interception that he threw when he had ample time and space, and 8.8 yards per play. 3 yards above standard. I'm sure he wouldn't think it was a good thing, given the fact that he had the interception on the play. And I did want to go back and try and look and see if both the plays were pressure where they had an intentional grounding call. And I believe they were, but I need to confirm that. They're both intentional groundings came on pressure plays. They didn't have a late pressure or something, which led to a throwaway. So anyway, not a great result with ATS, but in terms of yards, it was a small plus. Ballock quick 13 times. He threw for 6.8 yards per play on those, 11 yards above standard. So I think that's something the Ravens would like to do better if they could. Part of that, you know, could be making sure that you make quick tackles. That wasn't really the Ravens' problem in this game. They did a wonderful job of making tackles quickly and denying Yak in this game. In particular, Roquan Smith, who we'll talk about a little later, was fantastic. Had one of his best games in terms of denying Yak. But anyway, ball out quick, 6.8 yards per play, about 11 yards above standard for that set. They did have pressure 13 times, 33% of the plays, like I said, 73 net yards, 5.6 yards per play. One sack on those plays, but they also had two intentional grounding fouls, which for all intents and purposes were sacks. In fact, one of them was a little better because Caleb Williams threw the ball away, almost like a little girl, it seemed like, and he got the ball to the sideline. But he barely had a positive yardage on that throw. So if the ball had gone backwards, the ball would have been respotted if it went to the sideline, all the way to the sideline, back, you know, potentially a couple of yards further back. If the ball had been gone backwards and stayed in play, it could have been recovered. So that would have been a really nice extra benefit from Williams trying to get rid of the ball in a way that that he shouldn't have. So I know somebody tweeted me during the game and said, so unmanly, just take your sacks like a man and don't use intentional grounding. So anyway, with pressure, Williams actually performed pretty well. A couple of his big plays later in the game came with pressure, and he had 5.6 yards per pass. I think that included a 42-yard play, if I recall. Yeah, the 42-yard play was a pressure and a quarterback hit. So pressure initially from Van Noy and a quarterback hit by Humphrey that he lofted over to Moore, who made the one-handed grab behind Hamilton for that 42-yard play that got him right down into a goal line situation within the last minute or so of the game. The Ravens, the last thing they want after failing to recover a couple onside kicks last year was any sort of onside kick drama. So it was really nice the Ravens held him out off for four plays. They had a little bit of help, clearly, from the Bears and Caleb Williams missing Moore, I think it was, in the back of the end zone on the final play that they ran from scrimmage on fourth and one. But the Ravens did a good job to avoid any onside kick drama from occurring. Overall, Williams outperformed his opportunity set by 42 yards. 18 of that, it would only be 18, I should say, if you take away 24 yards in intentional grounding penalties. That's really appropriate. But, you know, other penalty yards that are gained, such as on a pass interference penalty, aren't added to the total. I don't do that. So I'm not sure really that either way is right, but I'll tell you both and you can decide for yourself whether you think 42 or 18 above his opportunity set was really the way he performed. Either way, 18 is about a half yard better than his opportunity set would have, or per pass than his opportunity set would dictate, and 1.1 if you give him credit for the entire 42. Okay, I mentioned in the first episode that Orr used a lot, and I mean a lot, of both deception and numbers in this game. Neither really worked. That's the spoiler for what I'm going to tell you in a few different ways next year. The first thing he did is he's used 5+ rushers on 16 plays. That's 41%. It was the second highest rate of the season. They had 42% against Houston. The Ravens obviously felt like in order to generate pressure, they had to bring numbers. It may have been a case where they felt like a young quarterback like Williams, who honestly looked very composed to me in the pocket, moved around very well in the pocket. The Ravens didn't do a particularly good job containing him from rolling out and still making extended plays. You know, he's not quite Lamar Jackson as a runner, obviously, but he was very effective at moving around the pocket and making throws. So I thought that, that was very impressive about him, and it did not work in terms of the numbers. I'll give you the results by numbers right now. Let me get to my spreadsheet here. Okay, so with three rushers, they had one such play for 9 yards. With four, they had 22 plays for 115 yards. 5.2 yards per play. They had one sack, their only sack on such a play. They had one turnover on such a play. That was their only turnover of the game. So the four-man pass rush was really what succeeded for the Ravens in this game. When they rushed five, 13 plays, 111 yards, 8.5 yards per play. With six, it was three plays for 41 yards, 13.7 yards per play. So, you know, in general, I'd say that the 5+ man rush did not work. Those plays averaged 9.5 yards per play between them. And they were only at 7.1 yards per play overall and 5.2 when they rushed four. So they did a much better job just rushing their standard numbers in this game. A lot of that, you know, it's not just about what the pass rush can generate. It's also about the extra man in coverage and how you can make use of him. Or maybe you can keep Williams a little uncomfortable by having a guy just past the line of scrimmage. They did use a spy on a few plays. Most notably, Kyle Van Noy was used as a spy. Then he rushed the passer late. He's not even included in the pass rush numbers for the play and generated a quarterback hit at the end of a play where Williams threw it down the right sideline. I believe it was incomplete and just out of bounds, but it was a nice use of a kind of a spy system there with Van Noy to pass late. What else we got here? Let's talk deception. Okay. So they used off-ball blitzes are the first component of deception that we keep track of. 12 of those, two of those were doubles. So it was 10 total plays upon which 12 off-ball blitzes were split. That's 0.31 total blitzers per play. Those plays went for 111 yards, 11.1 yards per play. But that's only 9.7 after you take away the 14 yards of intentional grounding that occurred on those. So that was on the Hamilton. Hamilton wasn't even the blitzer on the play, but he stunted through the middle, got through to Williams, and had him backed up before he threw the ball laterally to get rid of it. But anyway, that that would take him down to still 9.7 yards per play, even after intentional grounding is considered. So still a pretty significant number. They did have six pressures on those plays on 10 plays, but they also had four ATSs. So very barbelled results. Not a single ball was out quickly with an off-ball blitz coming. By the way, that does tell me that Williams probably has a little bit of weakness to this, that he wasn't reading hot and trying to find his receivers off as many as 10 blitzes that he didn't get a single ball off quickly. Normally there would be some of that, and we just didn't see that from Williams. Williams is willing to stand in the pocket and maneuver through the pocket, much in the way Lamar Jackson is, even if there's some fairly intense pressure. So we saw that from him in this game. They ran four stunts in the game. One of them was a double. And the three plays that were involved were incomplete, gain of 25, and a gain of 42. A couple things about this. The first is that Orr obviously called off any on-field stunting that the players might have thought to do themselves. So it takes away some of the empowerment that the players have on the field. But he also probably felt that they needed to maintain rush lanes against a fairly mobile quarterback like Williams. Williams did get outside the pocket for a 22-yard gain on one play. But I think if you're a fan of on-field stunt calls, I am, this was not a game that's going to make Orr feel like he's got to reinstitute it. And he's been now, I think it's been three consecutive games. He's basically said no stunting on field. It's kind of odd that they would, do that. I would think that your team is having trouble rushing the passer. One of the things you want to do is take advantage of every opportunity to try and get after him, including what the players can take advantage of on field or what they think they can take advantage of with use of picks and the valuable additional opportunity the under player can get after one block is peeled off him. They're not taking advantage of that. So Orr's not calling him, and in fact, he's saying you can't call him on field. Move on to simulated pressures. They ran those eight times, and they got carved up pretty effectively by the Bears and Williams in this game. 9.9 yards per play. They did have an intentional grounding in there, which would reduce it to 8.6 if you included that. They did have one of the sacks also was on a simulated pressure. The one sack, which was by Green to end that first drive, was on a simulated pressure. They used two plus elements on six plays. Two of those were drive-ending incompletes, and the other four were plays of 16, 27, 25, and 42 yards. The story of the Ravens season so far this year has been barbelled results, but the defense does seek out and get value, generally speaking, from barbelled results. And in this case, even though that yards per play would be nothing you'd ever want to allow, they ended two drives with incomplete passes that were based on deceptive pass rushes. And it was the second to last drive on third and five was one of them. And the second drive of the game, when they really needed to get off the field, they allowed a field goal to trail 6-0, but that's a lot better than going down two scores. And obviously the complex pressure they ran on that play, which was a combination of a blitz by Roquan Smith and a stunt by Hamilton. And then that maybe did not enable itself directly, but it was a pressure by Green on the play that resulted in the incomplete pass. So nice play. There's still as little total scheme. Well, there's as few stunts as they had in this game. They're still mixing up components of deception occasionally with Orr, so that that hasn't been totally shut down. Of the individual players and their pressures generated, I have Van Noy for four. Okay, this is an important distinction because I noticed that PFF had, I think, Travis Jones for four pressures in this game. I've got him for two, and I'm sure PFF has him for those two. PFF, it appears, also has him for two other pressures where he either wasn't first to get there or he had a pressure that was after 3 seconds. And I can remember he had one of the follow-up pressures to kind of chase Williams to the sideline and force a throwaway that occurred. So if you're seeing a difference between, oh, why does Travis Jones have four pressures from PFF and I've got only two, it's a definitional matter. He's got to be the first to get there, and he's got to get there within 3 seconds for me to term it as a pressure as I define it. So Van Noy had four such events. He had a pressure and that caused an intentional grounding. Then he had a quarterback hit, and then he had two more pressures. Green had a sack minus nine and two other pressures. By the way, Mike Green slowed down in this game as it went on, but on the first two drives, his play kept the Ravens in the game. Really kept the Ravens in the game. They went down only 6-0, and it was Mike Green who delivered a sack on 3rd and 5 to get the Bears off the field in the first drive after, 13 plays, I think it was. And then they had about a 9 or 10 play drive the second time. I know it was 22-3 after two drives. And he had pressures on the last two plays from scrimmage. And this is despite the fact that Green, to that point in the game, had already played 16 snaps of the first 25 in the game for both teams. So they really overused Green in a lot of ways, but he kept the Ravens in the game early. And then I'll say this about Green. Green was around the rest of the game, did not have another pressure in a lot of total pass rush snaps, but his play kept them in it early. I think the Ravens, keeping Green out there for 52 snaps in this game, 52 of the 63 defensive snaps, is just way too much. We have a separate look at the two rookies that I published in the last week during the bye week about Malachi Starks and Green and talking about that. So it's on a One Last Thing episode if you want to try and find it. And the conclusion we came to was that for Starks, the best thing is for him to be on the field as much as possible. So he should be in there every play. And he basically had been. To that point, he'd only missed 6 snaps all season. He was taken off the field a few times in this game, which was kind of interesting. But basically, he's been on the field for the whole year. But for Green, I think he would benefit tremendously and be more effective as a pure situational pass rusher. And they're playing him a lot more in early downs. Now, this may have some long-term benefits, but I think in terms of how he's playing this year, he's really suffering from being on the field too much. And he probably would be able to work more on his own pass rush arsenal if he was out there more as a pure situational pass rusher with full energy. And most players, they start in the NFL. That's what most pass rushers, that's how they come in, as situational pass rushers. Think back to Paul Kruger. He was purely that. Terrell Suggs played 39% of the snaps as a rookie and still had 12 sacks. So, Green, that would be, I would think, a very healthy percentage of the snaps for him to play. And Green's percentage of snaps has got to be well over 50% so far. Let me actually get that for you from my spreadsheet. So far for the season, Mike Green has played 62% of snaps for the Ravens. That's way too high. He's by far the highest of any outside linebacker. Robinson is second at 56.4%. He just dropped below him, despite the fact that he has been out for a game and a half now. Van Noy's played only 32% of the snaps. Owe played only 36% of the snaps. Of course, Owe wasn't there the last two games either, or the last game either. And Ajabo's played 18.3% of the snaps. So they're leaning on Green to an unbelievable degree. And I don't think it's entirely healthy. I could have saved some of that for the individual notes on Mike Green, but he's a guy that is critical to the Ravens' future. And I don't know if there's been a study done that correlates tiredness to the likelihood of injury. So is the likelihood of injury higher when you're tired? I haven't seen anything like that, but it wouldn't shock me if that could be proven to be true. And if it is, then you know that'd be yet another reason why you don't want to have Green on the field for an unbelievable number of snaps. I like rested rotational play, and the Ravens are limited in terms of what options they have now. Green can have some of his pass rush snaps replaced when Carl Lawson becomes active. Presumably that may happen as early as this Thursday against Miami. But if that doesn't happen, or if Lawson is on the deck for another week, all that will happen is that Lawson will take some of Green's pass rush snaps. It will not be early down snaps. At least I don't believe it will. Lawson is really a pure situational pass rusher at this point in his career. I think that's what they brought him here to do. I don't think they brought him to play early down. So maybe Mike Green loses pass rush snaps and plays more early downs, which I think, again, I think is probably not ideal for his development. But that's where we are right now. All right, I think that's a look at the pass rush here, and we can talk about some individual players and what they did in this game. Some absolutely fantastic performances from some individual defenders and some others that weren't so good, and they still came up with a big play here and there. But the first one is Roquan Smith, by far and away. His return, and we're going to get to Marlon Humphrey in a minute, his return as well, were the catalyst to getting this defense playing well and getting it turned around. Roquan had a terrific game against the run, but he also had a really terrific game in coverage. And I'll tell you, the big thing about Roquan is he allowed four passes to be completed basically in front of him. All four of them were. Three of them had zero yak, and the fourth had 5 yards of yak. But you break that down, it was a pass right for 1 yard that was -4 +5. Now, I refer to the first 4 yards of yak under that play as red yards, meaning they're yak yards that are gained behind the line of scrimmage. So while certainly they count in any kind of yak statistics you would see, they're not particularly valuable yak yards. If an incomplete would be just as good as a -4 +4, then there's no real gain from that. So those are red yards, I call them. The other ones are black yards. Those are the ones that you, once you're in the black, and think of it in terms of profit and loss, and in the red and the black, then you have real yards. I use the same terminology, by the way, to look at kickoff returns. So Jacoby Jones used to be someone who would return a lot of balls from 8 and 9 yards deep in the end zone. And they always talked about how, yeah, he would return it based on trajectory and this and that. I think, you know, it was a way that Jacoby Jones certainly would come up with occasional spectacular plays because he had a couple 108-yard kickoff returns. But he also would come up with a higher kick return average than a lot of other players because he had so many red yards included in that. So always a kind of interesting thing. And I think Jacoby Jones' career with the Ravens was so special. We'll forgive him these little things, but it's a little bit like Ed Reed's returns out of the end zone, but without the almost uniform success of such plays. See, Ed Reed, there's never a question over whether or not it was a good idea for him to return a ball out of the end zone. It was always a good idea. It was always going to be not only an exciting play, but you had a chance for something much better, than the potential offensive performance you'd have starting from the 20-yard line, or a better result even than starting from the 20-yard line a lot of the time. We all remember the 104 and the 108, or was it the 105 and the 108? So maybe we don't remember it exactly. Plays that he had that were returned for touchdowns that were the two longest in history, each at its own time. So there's never really a question of him coming out. With Jacoby Jones, a little less clear that his kickoff return success was as dominant, certainly, as Reed's interception return success, but Reed never went down in the end zone. I mean, he went some extraordinary number of consecutive interceptions in the end zone without failing to return one from the end zone. It's just and many times other Ravens are around him, telling him, oftentimes Ray Lewis telling him, stay down. And then he'd get up and go. You think at some point they just understand that you can't do that. You can't tell Ed Reed not to come out of the end zone with the football. That got pretty far afield. We're talking about the great game that Roquan Smith had. So anyway, part of it was that coverage and coming downhill, making tackles. He had 12 tackle contributions in this game. Roquan Smith had in this game. 9 of them were defensive wins. So that is a remarkable percentage of the total. So when you look at various sites have it recorded various ways. I saw PFF had them, I think, for 7 stops. So they're defining somehow differently what is a stopper. He has to be the primary tackler or something to be on the stop. I look at his total tackle contributions, and it's a very impressive number. I don't know that he missed a tackle in this game. I don't think he did. I didn't record one for him. But that would be another way in which he was quite dominant in this game. No, he didn't miss a tackle. He didn't miss a tackle. Made 13 out of 13, according to PFF. By the way, Roquan on the year right now has missed 3 tackles on 52 attempts. And he missed some time here, too. Obviously, between weeks 5 and 6, he didn't play in those games. And didn't play much at all in week 4 against Kansas City when he got hurt. So he's been a terrific tackler when he's been on the field, and one of the league leading guys. I know a lot of people are concerned about the Roquan contract, and this is something I get into with Voss on a fairly regular basis on Friday Morning GM. He hated the Roquan contract.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code RAVENS. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
No one plans for hair loss. But through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
But, you know, I kind of pushed him a little bit this last week and said, you know, is it... Look at all the money spent on Roquan Smith and toss in the draft capital as well, because there was a 2nd and a 5 that went in. They actually paid a little bit of extra draft capital to get the Bears to eat some of the salary when they acquired him. But then look at the results, the return on this. I mean, they acquired Roquan Smith at a time where he could have led them to a 2022 championship, but then Lamar got hurt subsequently. But Roquan totally turned that defense around and kept them in the playoff race. They got to a playoff game in Cincinnati where they lost with Tyler Huntley and that miserable play at the 1-yard line. But Roquan Smith certainly had a fine season in 22. He was all pro that year. He's all pro the next 2 years. He's played better by a considerable amount with the Ravens than he did with the Bears. So I think that when I look at what he's accomplished as a Raven so far in 4 years, I think we've got to think about Roquan Smith as a potential Ring of Honor player for the Ravens, given what he's done for the team. And there's certainly some guys from the early years, like a Michael McCrary and others like that didn't have as much contribution over a 4-year period. I think he's going to be one of the Ravens who deserves that consideration. And yet we're going to come in the next year and Roquan Smith might not be a Raven. There's $70 million in cap savings that are associated with cutting him. Now, all the other money, and he's got about a $32.5 million cap hit because they've rolled a lot of his prorated bonuses forward into years where the Ravens are going to finally have to pay for it next year in terms of cap. They have to pay for it whether Roquan is on the team or not. But the amount they can save is $7 million. I don't see a way that the Ravens right now could replace Roquan Smith for $7 million. They could take the shot in the draft and they could try and do it cheaper. But you know, you see the play of Teddy Buchanan this year, and I mean, it's a huge step down, and you still had to use a fourth round draft pick on him. If you use the top draft pick on him, I don't think anybody would be happy with that. You know, I certainly wasn't happy when they drafted Patrick Queen number one. Mosley, I had less of an issue with drafting him number one. I thought he was a better player, but Patrick Queen, you know, definitely was not worth the 28th overall pick, and definitely was not worth it when Xavier McKinney, damn it, was the other guy you could have had at that spot. So in terms of Roquan, he was drafted even higher overall, by the way. I think he might have been drafted 8th overall when the Bears took him. But I don't see an easy way the Ravens can replace him for $7 million. So they may try some form of extension. They may just let the contract run one more year and then decide again whether they need to cut him or not. But he's got $7 million of cap savings. It's going to be awfully enticing to the Ravens. If they can't renegotiate Lamar Jackson's contract, then he's one of the places they may have to go get the money. Marlon Humphrey is the other major one that they have. So they don't have a lot of choices on how to save money. They can save money on Broderick Washington, which I think they will. And they can save money if they cut Justice Hill, which I think they probably will. That's $3.25 million. Broderick Washington is $4 million. So that's kind of some low hanging fruit I would expect them to take. But Marlon Humphrey and Roquan Smith are the cut to the bone type cuts, $7.3 million each for 26 that the Ravens may have to make. So really important that they work hard to get the Lamar Jackson extension done and push some of that money down the road. Hopefully extend Lamar for another 4 years or so, perhaps something that would make him a Raven for life. And I hope Jackson is amenable to that sort of a contract. He'll be the highest paid player in the game as soon as it happens, and hopefully, you know, his time in Baltimore has been enjoyable to him enough, and you know, he certainly always played for a winner here. That this is a place he wants to finish his career and not go back home to Miami or play in warmer weather or whatever other situation he might otherwise consider. So anyway, Roquan Smith had his second best game of the season. It's incredible. A game like this is his second best game of the season, but the best game was that the Browns game in week 2, where it was probably one of the greatest games ever by any Ravens inside linebacker. And I will say this, having 2 games like this out of the 5 he's played, that's a strong tonic to not being cut next year. So I think the Ravens, as much as they're going to be enticed to sign him, to cut him, they may look to other ways, whether it's extend him or whatever it may be, to keep him on the team for 26, because he's just so darn valuable where he is. And they don't really they haven't found an easy way to replace him. The Ravens have had, you know, they had Ray Lewis for a long time. They moved over to CJ Mosley after a brief period of having Smith, the Jacksonville inside linebacker there for I think 2013 only. And then they fairly shortly after that moved to Queen. And then after a brief period of trying to have Owosso and some other guys in 2019 be a guy they could use, and that none of that worked out. And that the whole situation with Owosso and Kenny Young kind of reminds me of the Simpson and Buchanan situation that we have right now, is that they have guys with similar amounts of experience in the league that maybe haven't quite performed at the level expected, and they've been good supporting players, but I would be scared to death to go into the start of the season with those two guys specifically at the 2 inside linebacker roles. And I think the Ravens, they would at least get somebody else to bring in a legitimate veteran Mike play if they were to let Roquan walk. And I don't know that you can do that a lot cheaper than $7 million. So we'll see what they come up with. And that'll be an issue for next year, whether he's here or not. But Travis Jones played pretty well in this game. Move on to him a little bit. I mentioned PFF had him for four pressures. I've got him for two. Played the run pretty well. Blew up a run play early in the game. He's a guy who the Ravens leaned on very heavily. So they played the dime 17 times. They went over the packages in the first episode. He was on for every single dime snap, which shows you just how little they have in terms of pass rush optionality on the defensive line. Before, they had various things they could try. They could put in Tavius Robinson on the inside and use Aeneas Peebles to, you know, last time they played a game with Aeneas Peebles active, let's put it that way. They could do that. And then they could try other things to combinations with having Travis Jones and Nnamdi Matabike when he was healthy, or having Travis Jones and Aeneas Peebles when they were both healthy together at the same time and active at the same time. But now they're really down to no other options. They've been using Travis Jones as a, you know, effectively a nose tackle, usually attempting to confuse with simulated pressure more than anything else on third, on obvious passing downs, blitzing sometimes otherwise, but they don't really have a lot of good options to win one-on-one matchups when you kind of give away one on the inside. And I had Trenton Simpson playing next to Jones, some on the inside, always standing, but some on the inside and some on the outside. So he's kind of a roving pass rusher in some of these dime packages. About half of the dime packages involved Trenton Simpson roaming the line of scrimmage. And then they had, for the other ones, they had Taven Bryan in with him a lot. And that's not a, I mean, Taven Bryan has provided some pass rush over the course of his career, but his time is pretty well spent. And, you know, he's available, and the Ravens just put him on the practice squad, just elevated him for the first time in this game. Just not exactly what you want in terms of pass rush optionality. They haven't yet gotten to a point where they think Okoye and Jones together would be a reasonable pass rush battery on the inside. They might get to that point at some point. If they decide that having two inside guys where Okoye can take that nose and maybe take a double team on some plays, and whoever of Jones or Okoye would not be double teamed, then would have a certain advantage in terms of being able to get a good bull rush going on a obvious passing down, get some traffic through that cone to at least displace the quarterback and get him on the move. But they haven't got to the point where they're comfortable with that. Who else do we want to talk about? Let's talk a little bit about Brent Urban. Brent Urban came into this game, I thought, as a fairly pivotal player, a guy that they could potentially play on the outside. They did that exactly three times in this game, where they used him in an uncovered nickel, used effectively a base defense, but with only one outside linebacker. And so they have the other outside linebacker, the five tech is effectively playing on the edge. Urban has done that a fair number of times for the Ravens in the past. When I say that, I'm sure it's less than 100 snaps career, but he's probably done it 20 to 40 snaps in his career, I would say, of uncovered nickel they played. And that's been something that has been reasonably effective in the past. They did it for the first two snaps of the game, and they did it for one snap on the second drive, and then they abandoned it for the game. So they had plenty more opportunities where they wanted to have a probably a little bit larger set of run defenders, but just they wanted to give Green a little bit of a rest on from some of this early down snaps, or give Ajabo, who's not, you know, particularly good at them, a little bit of time on the bench, or give Van Noy a little bit of rest on those pass, on those kind of snaps. They didn't go back to it. So they saw something they didn't like on those snaps. I wonder what it was. There was a pass for 21, a pass for four, and a run for one on the three plays involved. So I'm sure they had their reasons, but I was a little surprised that they abandoned as quickly as they did. I also thought they might have used Taven Bryan in that role, since he's really a five tech in terms of a 6'4", 291 guy. He's not really your traditional three tech build. He's more like a Brent Urban, but a little bit smaller version of Urban that you would normally have at a five tech. But they really used him exclusively as an inside pass rusher, and they had him just on with Okoye as a regular rotational group. So Brian played a fair number of snaps in the game. I want to look at that because it was surprisingly high, I thought. And largely it was because he was on the field for about half of those dime snaps. Don't have it right in front of me. I know I've got to update this because, okay. So Okoye, for example, played 16 snaps, but Taven Bryan played 22 snaps, or about 35% of the time. So the difference primarily is the difference in dime snaps that they played with Bryan in there for a fair amount of those. Very happy with the play of Mike Green. And I, you know, mentioned earlier, and I think in the pass rush, all I really need to mention, but he kept the Ravens in the game early in that on those first two drives when nobody was playing particularly well. And I just wish there was a better developmental scheme or rotational scheme for him to develop to his maximum potential more quickly. It may be good. It may pay off in the future that he's playing more snaps, but right now it just looks like they're abusing him in terms of the number of snaps they have him on the field for. Kyle Van Noy came back, had a good game, led the Ravens in pressures, as we talked about a little bit earlier. He one of his pressures led to one of the two intentional groundings. He had a quarterback hit and two pressures in addition. So good game from Van Noy, and still a guy who can give you a little something in coverage once in a while. Buchanan and Simpson had their playing time adjusted in this game. So Buchanan basically played all of the weak side linebacker snaps, but he was taken off in dime and replaced at weak side linebacker by Hamilton, effectively, who moved over to play dime back. And then in terms of who was on the field as an inside linebacker, by Trenton Simpson for a few of those snaps, for half of those snaps. And Simpson, again, was roaming along the line of scrimmage looking for a place to rush the passer. He wasn't lining up at weak side linebacker. He didn't really line up off ball other than to try and find his spot to rush the passer. He was fairly well dedicated to that during this game. He doesn't mean he didn't drop at all. He did, but they used him mostly to rush the passer. We talked about Roquan already. I guess we want to talk about Kyle Hamilton. Now, Hamilton, I'll say this about this game against the Bears. This is as tough as it will get for Kyle Hamilton to play slot corner the entire season. So if he's going to play, if the Ravens are going to go to an every down big nickel, which they have for the last two ball games, and it's almost that. I have to be careful with my words here. They do move him to dime back on obvious passing downs. They had 17 of those. So it's not insignificant, but they had 36 snaps where they played big nickel. And they're very effective in the big nickel in this game. They only allowed 3.7 yards per play, by far their most effective of any package. But I can't think of another team that's going to give Hamilton much more trouble in terms of the matchups he'll face in the slot. So you got three receivers to choose against primarily. You have DJ Moore, and you have Adunze, and Zacchaeus played a fair amount, but they have, anyway, they're no stranger to 11 personnel. They like to get 11 personnel on the field, and they have the good receivers to do it. They played some 12 coming into this game, but Cole Kmet was out, and so they had to deal with having Loveland, and Smythe was their second tight end. He didn't play too much in this game. He had a few big blocks, I noticed, but he did not play too much. And what they had Loveland on the field for 51 snaps out of 63, Smythe for 20, Carlson for 4. But then the big other thing they did was used a sixth offensive lineman, and that was Ozzie Trapillo from the draft. You may remember that name, but an offensive tackle. I think he went to Boston College, but I may be wrong about that. He was a guy I liked in the draft. I do remember that much about him. Would have been a lower round selection for the Ravens. The Bears got him and obviously made use of him in this game. He was number 75. It surprises me that he played only 7 snaps. It really seemed like a lot more than that. And by the way, when they went to that seventh, when they went to the extra offensive lineman, they generally took Starks off the field, maybe not every single time, but on a lot of those plays. And so you'll see Starks played 58 snaps in this game, which means he missed 5. That was largely the reason, is the Ravens felt like they needed to get bigger against the sixth offensive lineman. So they went to a base defense, moved Hamilton back on those plays, and then played three offensive linemen, two outside linebackers, and two inside linebackers to go with a four-man secondary. So didn't see Starks for all the plays in this game. He missed five plays in this game. He missed six only the whole year coming in. So obviously he got a fair amount of he got some time on the bench in this game. Marlon Humphrey was absolutely terrific in this game. He did a good job in terms of maintaining coverage. He didn't take any penalties. He went down with an apparent injury, sat down there at the 3-yard line after making a temporarily touchdown saving tackle at the four. And he sat there for a little bit, maybe just a gamesmanship thing to get the defenders a little more time and a little more rest as they tried to defend the goal line. They did so unsuccessfully. But he came back in the game after that, which was nice. And, good that he didn't suffer injury. Both he and Ronnie Stanley coming back into the game was about as big news as the Ravens can get in terms of this game. I mean, Ronnie, if they'd lost him, they'd be back to Joe Noteboom, and Joe Noteboom has not played well this year, and that's just civil. Ronnie has not either, but he's played exceptionally poorly in two games where he's been obviously hurt and just tried to go, and he's played reasonably well in the other games where that was not the case. So he returned in this game. I thought, you know, first blush, he played okay in this game. So that's a big step up from playing lousy, not playing at all, and playing lousy in the last three games that the Ravens had. So nice to see that. And really nice to see Humphrey came back and play. The Bears lost some players in this game that came in hurt, banged up. So that was a factor. The injuries were definitely a factor in terms of who won this game. Being down three corners was a big deal for them. So they had to suffer through some of what the Ravens have been through on defense in the past few weeks. All right, last guy I want to talk about is Nate Wiggins. A terrific game in terms of the biggest play of all, delivering the biggest play of all. Otherwise, he had coverage of Rome Odunze a lot for the game, and Odunze was a very high draft pick from last year's draft. And I think he might have gotten hurt last year. What happened to Odunze last year? Did he miss time? So he played in 24, but no, it looks like he actually made it through the whole season. He played 952 snaps last year, so that's not the problem. And he's already, you know, establishing himself as one of the best receivers in the National Football League this year with a terrific start to the season here. The Ravens didn't really have anyone who could cover him. Wiggins was probably the best at doing it, but he ran all over the Ravens for 114 yards, and kind of felt like watching him was a little bit like watching Flowers out of cuts, even though Odunze is much larger at 6'3", 215, very gifted athlete and good route runner, and a guy who he beat Wiggins to the outside on one play for a gain of about 21. He was crossing a number of times, and Williams pretty much hit him in stride on those and had some decent yak on those plays. So good game for Odunze, certainly. And Wiggins, I think, I don't know if he actually traveled with him for the entire game, but by traveling with a portion of snaps in this game, and Wiggins could be seen on either side of the field, but by traveling with a portion of snaps, I think he did the Ravens secondary a good service. And Odunze was very effective. I wouldn't say he was contained in any sense, but at least the Bears did not have a touchdown pass through the air, so that's at least something. They were able to get him off the field late, and Wiggins was certainly a part of that. And Wiggins' interception was the single biggest play of the game. I could go through and talk about my MVPs real quickly, and then we'll call it a day here. But my number one, we'll start at number three. My number three star is Nate Wiggins. did not have an overall great coverage day. He did have a kind of a missed tackle that wasn't so great. I think that was on the left sideline on a little screen pass over on that side. But he did come up with the game's biggest play, and that's enough for me. That interception immediately gave the Ravens set the Ravens up for a two-play drive to score. And that was the one that took a very tenuous 3-point lead when the Bears had the ball and put the Ravens up 10 with the reversal of possession there. So very nice play from Wiggins. And the fact that he was on Odunze, as I mentioned, I think was benefiting the Ravens. Marlon Humphrey is my number two guy. Marlon Humphrey, a lot of positive in this game. I delivered a big, hard QH on Caleb Williams. I was actually surprised Williams got up from that one. He was hit from both sides, kind of sandwiched by Van Noy and Humphrey. Humphrey also had the very fine play on the right sideline versus Zacchaeus in terms of standing him straight up. There were Bears fans near us who were calling for a helmet-to-helmet shot. It was a heads up play. It didn't look like, while there was contact to the helmet, it didn't look like it was any kind of forcible contact to the helmet. It did look to me like there should have been no forward progress whistle blown, and that caused Humphrey to lose an opportunity to strip the football and take it away. He did. Certainly anyone looking through purple colored glasses would say Humphrey had the football at the end of that play. But even if Zacchaeus had gotten it back, it would have been a gain of zero or maybe a gain of one at the most instead of a gain of four. And a nice play for Humphrey in terms of what he accomplished anyway on that. So good game for Humphrey. Humphrey's my number two guy. And Roquan Smith, by far my number one guy. Outstanding game. The big statistics are the yak he allowed on the four receptions is negligible. Only 15 yards total on four receptions, but five yak, including four of those five red yards. So Roquan, as soon as somebody caught the football, he was triggered downhill. It's interesting in practice on the 7-on-7 drills in particular, they hold off the inside linebackers from triggering downhill to simulate their tackling. Because they don't want them there as, you know, that quickly. And they want to try and give the receivers a chance to turn the ball upfield and show what they can do in terms of making people miss. But nobody's telling Roquan in a game that he can't trigger downhill quickly. And he did a great job of it in this one. Anyway, my number one star very easily in this one. And that'll do it for today. Folks, thanks so much for the questions. We appreciate you listening to Maureen and me go through that first episode. Hopefully it wasn't too halting or vaudevillian for you in terms of what's going on. But love my wife, and she's a very significant component to this process. And I not be able to do it without her. I'm not even sure I'd want to do it without her anymore. It'd be a very strange change in the process if I ever had to do this by myself. So thanks, Maureen. Thanks for coming on the show in the first one. And thanks also for being who you are in terms of wanting to do this with me. Other folks out there, thanks very much. We have a mini buy coming up. So we have a small window for a couple of more short episodes. If you'd like to be on with me about a topic that you're passionate about, just hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter, and I want to hear from you. That'll do it. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.